Welcome to the Birth Warrior Podcast. In each episode, we feature the stories of birth warriors, women who have persevered to find their own truth in pregnancy and birth. As you hear these women share their stories of love, autonomy, connection, and power, it is our deepest wish that you will be inspired, empowered, and supported to find your own truth. We are honored these women have stepped forward to share their personal stories and to help us remember that we all have the power to choose what is right for us. The Birth Warrior Podcast is a presentation of the Indie Birth Association and is not intended to be medical advice.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Birth Warrior Podcast. I am your host, Jaden Graham. Today we have Mayra on the show. Mayra is a doula and a beginner midwife in the wise woman tradition with Indie Birth Midwifery School. Her journey as a mother and the births of her four children have guided her into a heart-centered path of serving women in their childbearing years. Just as she found her voice and truth through birth, she believes every woman has the opportunity to find their inner power through all aspects of the mothering or parenting journey, including birth. Mayra, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. Wow.
Yeah. So just really wherever you would like to start.
Oh, okay. So thanks so much for having me on the show. You pronounced my name very beautifully. I'm from Brazil.
Thank you.
And Mayra is an indigenous name. And it means the afternoon sun. So that's my name.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I know. It's a special name. And I've learned to own it and also to pronounce it to English, you know, English-speaking folks, just the way it is. Like, this is my name. If you can say it, great. If you can't, that's also okay. But I'm going to say it the way it is now.
Yes, as am I.
Right. Cool. So I guess I'm going to start by saying that I am a beginner midwife. I've been a doula for 5 years, and I'm a student midwife in the Wise Women tradition with Wise Woman tradition with Indie Birth, and I'm completely nuts and crazy about Indie Birth, everything, philosophy, way of life, teaching, like completely aligned with Marin's and Margot's teachings. So this is who I am right now. I'm from Brazil, but I'm right now living in Los Angeles, California. So that's where I'm speaking from. And I'm 41 years of age. And I've given birth to 4 children. And it's actually through the birth of these 4 children that my path as a birth keeper started for me, you know, because I've done many different things in my life. And for the longest time, it never occurred to me that I could be supporting women in their childbearing years, you know. And you'll understand why when I tell you my story, because I've been involved in this world much longer, you know, before I heard my calling to being a doula and a birth worker and birth service. I had been already involved with mother circles and doulas and midwives and things like that. So that's why. Mm-hmm. So I just want to go back to first that, you know, birth and breastfeeding and baby stuff have always been around me because my mom gave birth to 5 of us. I'm the second, and we're all born in Brazil, except my oldest sister who was born in Germany. But that's not what I want to say. What I want to say is that my mom has always been crazy about babies and you know, breastfed all of us, and you know, so I had this in me that I wanted to, you know, give birth and be a mother. It's something that I really can't explain. It's always been in me, and when my 2 younger brothers were born, especially the last one. I was 9 years old when he came, and he was the first love of my life. I fell in love with him completely. I couldn't take my eyes off of him. I sang to him. I put him to sleep. I would do everything, you know, just because I was so in love. So my story as a mother begins with my own siblings, you know, and also because my mom always, you know, loved babies and would always talk about babies. And I also knew that my grandmother, who came to Brazil in the early 50s as an immigrant, she's still alive. She's 91 years old, and she plays the flute. And she came to Brazil to be a flutist in the early 50s. Mm-hmm. And she's French. And she gave birth to 6 children in Brazil, and my mom is the oldest. And my mom was actually a breech baby. Ha-ha. Interesting fact.
Ha-ha.
She was born. Yeah, ha-ha. My mom was a breech baby. grandmother. Yeah. My grandmother gave birth to her, you know, naturally. And my grandmother has always been a very intuitive person. She has many qualities, let's put it this way, and very intuitive. So, for example, you know, I know that my great-grandmother did not breastfeed her children, for example, but she knew that she had to and wanted to breastfeed her own children. So she was going against all the movements that were happening in the 50s. All right, the medicalization of birth was already happening in Brazil, and she was giving birth unmedicated and vaginally, you know, and looking for different doctors to support her. She was breastfeeding her newborn babies, which is something that people were beginning to not do in Brazil at that time. But in France, people had not been doing it for a long time. So my grandmother has always been a very intuitive woman in the sense, like having her babies, taking care of the babies and all that. Going into motherhood was a bit different, and I've had my own questions and sort of like, let's say, what's the word I'm looking for? Issues in like, hey, why did you do it this way and not that way? Or, you know, at me growing up as a woman, being faced with, there's a lot of lack in my own upbringing and in my mother's upbringing, a lack of mothering presence. This is what I found out when I started working in my own mothering skills, let's say. Yeah, that's how I started to question things like, hey, wait a minute, why did you go back to work when this and this were only 2 months old? You know, things like that. So it started coming up for me, and especially at the time of the pregnancy of my second son. That's when I became radicalized. So I'm going to start sharing my stories now so that you understand. I think this little intro is important as we shared earlier, like some, the roots. So these are my roots. Well, at least on my mother's side, and there I've got plenty wonderful other stories on my father's side, because I also believe we're doing this collective healing. I'm doing generational healing as I speak, and as I do birth work, I'm healing my own family story and history on both sides, my mom's side, especially on my mother's side, but also on my father's side, and also for the generations that I have given birth to, like my own children, and then, you know, the future generations to come. So I really believe that what we are doing right now, being conscious birth workers, conscious birth keepers, conscious parents is really like trying to heal whatever, you know, whatever we can do better. You know what I mean? I think for me, this is bottom line message is that, like, I want to do better. I'm not saying that you guys did it wrong. I'm saying that I want to do differently and I want to do better. So that's really how I came into birth work. So I must admit as well that I had 2 abortions before I was pregnant with my first daughter. And those were 2 terminations in 2 different times in my life where I was a teenager and, you know, I felt, and my mom was like, you can't have these babies. And I'm like, you know, I can't. So I also have this story, and I believe that sharing this without any shame, I also want to make women know that, you know, wherever you are in your path as a woman, you know, losses and terminations are also part of our journeys as women, you know, as well as our menstrual cycle, our losses, our abortions. So my interpretation of my own choice to make those terminations early in my adolescence is that I had a deep desire to be a mother, very deep, very rooted. There was something in me that really wanted to be a mother. And when I was 20, I met João, right, who's my husband now. And we were together, and he had this dream of, you know, living in the States again. He had lived here prior, you know, in other circumstances. I had already lived abroad. And I said, yeah, let's go. So what happened is, as soon as we came to the States, a month after I had arrived here, not here in the West Coast, we were in the East Coast, we were living in Boston, I conceived my daughter there. And we were staying at a friend's house who's a psychic. And he told us, hey, you guys protecting yourselves, because there's a baby here. There's a baby who wants to come, and there's a baby here. And I was like, hey, what a dog. Come on. As it turns out, this baby needed to be conceived in this country, gestated in this country, and born in this country. So I gave birth to my first daughter in Boston 19 years ago. And I thought at the time that I was prepared, because I had been a classical ballerina, so I had always been fit all my life. So I thought I had everything in place. Like, I'm super healthy, I'm super fit, I got this, my grandmother has given birth 6 times, my mother's 5 times, I can totally do it, this is going to be a piece of cake. And that's how I came into labor. I came into labor completely naive and unaware of the system in place. First of all, I had no idea that the medical system was what it was. But mind you, actually, I had a very good experience in this first birth. But, you know, I was within a system. And one of the questions that was early asked to me while I was pregnant was, so we have a birth center attached to this hospital. Would you like to be attended by a midwife in the birth center or a doctor in the hospital? And I go like, I had never even heard the word midwife before. I was like, I think a doctor in the hospital, because that's what people do, right? Like, what's a midwife anyway? So that's how,
right.
I got prenatal care in the hospital and ended up giving birth in that same hospital. But labor came naturally. You know, I started contracting like at night, and the single thing that I had from the very, you know, I know that not all Lama's classes are bad, but the only things I did for labor preparation were Lama's classes in the hospital, and they were very, 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 very bad. And the impression I got was like, oh yeah, so I'm gonna start feeling this thing, like, and then it's time to push the baby out. And then I can't eat, I can't drink, and I can't sleep, because when I feel this, I didn't even understand the concept of a contraction. Yes, I couldn't grasp the concept. I only read what to expect, what to expect. I was away from my family. None of my friends were having babies. I was only 21, right? 20, 21, 22. I was going to be 22 by the time I gave birth. I was 22. But, you know, none of my friends were having babies. I had only the one friend who had given birth in the hospital and was a little bit traumatized in Brazil. And, you know, but I had my family story, so I was very naive. So that's how I started this labor. As soon as my contractions started, I stopped eating, I stopped drinking, and I didn't sleep because I was waiting for the baby to come.
Right.
So when I was calling And they were like, oh, yeah, so how long and how far? And, you know, trying to understand a little bit where I was in labor. I was like, I have to go in. This baby is coming. She's like, but you're only like 10 minutes apart, right? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. So, so we go in. It's raining. We get in the car. We go in. And they admit me because I am dehydrated at that point. And banished. Yes. Hadn't slept, hadn't eaten, hadn't drunk a single glass of water. So they put me in, on that IV on, and I remember like feeling like so taken care of. I'm like, thank heavens, I'm here. They're feeding me and everything, you know. So labor went on for a day, you know, and I was quote unquote stuck on 3 centimeters. I wasn't dilating at all.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so by the, you know, by the second night, I was just like, please make this go away. I can't do this anymore. Give me drugs, give me drugs. And all I wanted was a drug-free birth because I knew I could do it, but I was like, give me drugs. So they started giving me drugs. And then, you know, they gave me morphine. They gave me a lot of stuff. I tried to sleep that night. Couldn't. The next day, I was just like, oh my God, this is it. I understood. I'm like, this isn't going anywhere, right? Like, this is going to continue. Yeah, it's going to continue. And it's up to you. So they were trying to make me walk. They called a doula, a Brazilian doula from the birth center to be with me. They called her in. And for the longest time, I thought that woman was a psychologist because she helped me so much. I had no idea what a doula was at the time. Yes.
Right. I was about to ask you. So you never, so because of the fact that you never, you know, going back in your story, how you said that you had really never heard of a midwife. So you really never heard of a doula either. Yeah. New concept.
No way. Totally.
No. In the middle of labor, nonetheless.
In the middle of labor, they call this angel.
Yeah.
She's an angel who comes to me and she stayed with us for what? 7, 6 hours. I don't know. She stayed with us, you know, until my baby was born. And I was so grateful because I finally, and she spoke, I mean, I speak English well. I spoke English well at the time, but you know, I was feeling completely lost, completely lost. I had no ground. I was completely not grounded. You know, at some point, you know, they, oh my gosh, it's very dramatic, you know, very dramatic. And at some point, I would, you know, shout at my husband, he hates me, things like that, you know. But it was very shocking, but like the way I behaved, and I wasn't expecting this at all from me, but that's what happened. And this lady came, and actually the whole team was very supportive. They hadn't broken my waters in almost 40 hours, you know, to at some point, you know, at the very end, after many drugs and, you know, and I was just exhausted because I hadn't slept in 2 nights. And they come and they talk to me, and then the doctor says, how about an epidural? And I'm like, okay. So, you know, I gave in to the epidural, and actually 3 hours later, she was born. So at that point, I know I feel like, okay, that epidural really helped me. And, you know, they broke my waters in the middle, all the things, but they probably put Pitocin, but I don't know because I didn't know what it was at the time. She was born. She was my biggest baby, actually. Oh, I don't know how in pounds what it means. But it means more than 8 pounds, maybe 8.5. She was like 3 kilos, 800. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's about 8.5, I guess, or something. And she was very chubby, very cute, and she had a lot of things to say. She cried right away. She had a lot of fluid. And I remember that, you know, she was with me. And then they took her away. And I said, I'm going to breastfeed this child. Don't give her anything. And they put, there was like a card. I'm a breastfed girl. Because there was the I'm a bottle fed girl.
Oh, God.
Yes. So they put this on her crib. And I made sure. I was like, you don't give her anything. Don't you give her?
Yeah.
I've always been very strong about breastfeeding. So I just knew it in my heart because, like, you don't touch my baby. But anyway, they brought her back and she was as pink as a piglet. And it took me years to realize they'd had given her oxygen. Duh. you know. So anyway, this is my first birth.
Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, 2 days later, they tell us, go home. And I'm like, go home. What home? We live like in a bedroom. I can't go home. There's no home. You know, like, oh my gosh. But, you know, you guys are feeding me and everything. But anyway, we went home and then our journey started. So I just want to say that I look back at my 22-year-old self and I want to give myself a hug and I wanted to tell myself that I did the best I could with the tools I had at the time. And I felt a lot of guilt over this birth because, you know, my sensation was like, I knew I could do it, but I just didn't. So for whatever reason, it took me years to understand this labor pattern and what was happening. You know, it took me years, and to accept as well. So, you know, I hope I've come to terms with it by now, that I don't feel any more guilt, and just love and appreciation for the whole experience, you know, because I tell you, if I had been in Brazil, in the system, they would never have waited almost 48 hours. They would have cut me up, you know? So I feel, I have this tell me.
Yeah. I mean, I also feel too that, you know, even, doesn't matter how old we are. I mean, I was 28 when I gave birth. I'm about to be 33. You know, I thought I knew what I had to know. I thought I knew what I, you know, because I ended up getting transferred, but you know, I didn't know. Like, and I don't think anyone can ever fully grasp it until they've actually gone into it themselves, you know, because I feel like we can study and we can know the blueprint for labor, but you know, a blueprint is just a blueprint. It's not it's not an exact formula, you know, and everyone else's like concept of pain too, or concepts of, you know, whatever, as far as just like what they're bringing into the birth are so wildly different, you know? Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think, yeah. Totally.
So anyway, this is how I start my mothering journey. And and then by the time she's 2 months old, you know, we look at each other and we say, what are we doing in this country? We have no family. We're struggling. Let's go home. So we went back to Brazil and he started a new career in Brazil. And me too. I went back to my previous career, which was I'd been an English teacher before, even though I hadn't finished college. I had ditched college. Both of us, I had dropped out, and we went home, and we were like, in Brazil, at least universities, public universities are free, so we can get ourselves back and get a diploma somehow, and, you know, just now we're parents. Now, you know, it's the whole, like, repent. We gotta make a decent living.
Yeah.
So we had this whole, like, in our early 20s, like, this whole crisis, like, responsibility crisis, like, because this was a very cherished and desired child, but totally unplanned, of course. Mm-hmm. Very, very desired. And I knew I conceived her the day I did, because I just knew, but, totally unplanned. So, anyhow, let's fast forward 7 years. 7 years later, almost 7 years because I got pregnant before, I had an IUD, I was convinced in the States to wear an IUD, and I just said yes, but again, if I think more in depth, I have more things to say about that, but I'm going to save this for another opportunity. And, so I was just like, you know, my husband had, working, and I was working again, and I had gone back to college. You know, in between those 7 years, many things happened. We separated. We spent 2 years separated. Then we got back together. Then we went to France. We lived in France. Then we got back together. And when we came back from France, I told them, listen, man, I want another child. And, I want another child. I can't wait anymore. I've been waiting all these years. And so, okay. So I take out the IUD, and we're not even trying. Like, within this 2 or 3, you know, cycles, I'm pregnant. And this baby also was a very cherished baby. And as soon as we were pregnant, he had a name, because my daughter had been calling him. All her, you know, first years of life, she said she had this brother whose name was Gabriel. So Gabriel was we knew that Gabriel was coming. So I tried to prepare as much as I could. And that's when I started getting involved with a center called Free Womb Ventre Livre in Brasília, the capital of Brazil, where we're from. I'm actually born in Rio de Janeiro, but I grew up in Brasília. So we were in Brasília, and I was going to the center where I met this amazing woman called Rita Pinho. Rita. She was a doula and teaching, you know, prenatal yoga, and I met some other doulas there teaching prenatal yoga. So I would go there for the prenatal yoga classes, and that's when I realized I had had a doula for my first birth. I'm like, oh, okay. In that center, I started, you know, attending mother circles and listening to mothers, and, you know, just really feeling this, it's like a lioness had been awakening me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to prepare. I don't want to work outside of the home anymore. I'm going to make a deal with my husband. So I made a deal with him that I wanted to see a stay-at-home mom. He was a freelancer at the time, but he made a good amount of money. He said, yes, that's fine. You can do it. Let's do it for 3 years. I'm like, let's do it for 3 years. By that time, I managed to finish college and all that. So I was like, I finally had a diploma, you know, everything was set. And, you know, except that I was still very much in the mindset that I can't afford this and I can't afford that. And which to an extent is true. Like, I couldn't like pay a midwife out of pocket, anyways, I didn't make it work. I knew that my friends were having births at home, that they were having midwives and doulas. I was involved with the home birth community 12 years ago, 13, 12 years ago, I was involved. But I just thought, oh, this is not for me. I can't have this. You know, I was still very much in this mindset. And then because I used to work in a school, I had this, you know, insurance. So I said, I'm just going to use this insurance, blah, blah, blah. And I know I can give birth. And I found this doctor who agreed to have me the birth that I wanted, except that the hospital that she received babies in is a 98% cesarean rate private hospital.
Wow.
And yes. And I was like, so I think if you were not aware, or if some listeners are not aware, that in Brazil, especially in the private sector, we have like an 80% cesarean rate, and that the elective cesarean rate is like the highest in the world or something. So this is totally another topic that we could definitely have a larger conversation on that. But
totally,
I was involved with the other spectrum, you know, the people who were working with the humanization of birth, which are people who have been in Brazil for 30 years, you know, trained doulas, goes there every year. You know what I mean? There's a lot of good stuff going on about birth in Brazil. And I was with those people, you know, that's what I want. I'm like, you know, birth is birth. I mean, I'm going to birth and I take care of my children. I breastfeed and everything. Anyways, so what happens is I go into labor, 40 weeks, both my first children are 40 weeks. I go into labor and I labor by myself at night because my husband doesn't buy it, right? I'm like, hey man, wake up, I'm laboring. Ah, no, he would think of the first one. Ah, no, no, you're not. And there I am, like, full on labor. Like,
no, man.
And, you know, like, move on. And, you know, whenever I would do a pose, like whenever I would, you know, squat or be on all fours, the thing would get intense. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the real thing. This is the real deal. And so I'm laboring on my own. So finally I get him out of bed. I said, get up, let's go. It's time. We call our doctor. She says, I'm going to be on my way. Go. And And we used to live in a three-story apartment with stairs. And he only believed that I was about to give birth when, you know, a wave came and I had to stop in the middle of the stairs just to labor. And he was like, oh, okay. She can't talk. She can't move. When this thing comes, okay, this baby must be coming now, right? Because I was totally in the car, have the worst trip ever. It was like a 10 or 15 minute drive because this was 4:30 in the morning. And so we arrived at the hospital. And of course, they don't know who I am. Where's your doctor? She's on her way. And, you know, emergency. Again, this 98% cesarean rate hospital. They want to put me on a wheelchair. I don't know any better. Because even though I know I'm going to give birth, I have no idea, first, what birthing in Brazil really looks like, because I hadn't given birth in the system in Brazil. I had given birth in the system, but not in Brazil. And I was, again, naive as to the protocols of that institution that I didn't know. It's an institution that I didn't know. And I put myself in that situation. They wheeled me in, and the doctor, you know, on call is like, "Oh, I have to do an examination on you, a cervical examination." I'm like, "The baby's coming. I'm pushing the baby out." He's like, "No." And then he stuck his fingers in there, and, you know, panic comes in his eyes. I can see it. It's panic. He's like, "The baby's here. Like, oh, you're 9 or 10. I don't know. You're fully dilated." I'm like, "Duh." I'm like, "Yeah." I'm pushing. So he's like, "Wheel her in." And, you know, it's like a whole drama. You know, I wear my gold things, just taking my things away, you know. And they put, you know, they rush me in into the, what is it called? It's not even labor.
The birthing suite? Oh.
They wheel me in, and then this, everything is happening really fast. So there is this doctor who had totally panicked. I had seen the fear in his eyes. And there is this nurse there in the very cold place receiving me. And she starts tying my legs up. And she tied my legs up. And I look at my husband. I'm like, what's going on? He says, "I don't know." And then I'm like, "Where's Patricia? Patricia, my doctor." I'm like, Where is she? She's coming. And it's just, I start pushing. I'm like, "The baby's coming. The baby's coming." It's very dramatic. He comes and looks at me, this doctor, and says, "I'm going to give you a peek." He means an episiotomy. I have no idea what an episiotomy is. Oh, me at the time. I didn't know. He did it without my consent. And
after, I'm so sorry.
I know. My doctor rushes in. She sees me. She understands what's going on. And she gives me a kiss. She says, "It's all good. It's all good. Just breathe. I'm here. Your baby's here." I'm like, "I know." So, you know, she just comes in front of me and receives the baby. My waters were intact. And when my baby came, Gabrielle came, I felt my waters released, just like I it was this waterfall of bliss, like, and I felt this waterfall because the waters burst at the same time as he was coming. And I was like, and he's a Cancer. He's like a water totally. He's born on the 3rd of July. Totally Cancer, totally water. Only emotions, like, he's the only water in this house. Anyway, she brings him to me. She says, "Smell your baby. They're going to take your baby away now." And I was totally unprepared for that. I was like, "What?" And I tell João, "Follow somebody with the baby." I don't know who it was. The ugly nurse, some other nurse. I don't know. I know that my doctor stayed with me to, you know, sew me up. I don't know what they did with my placenta. I, you know, never saw it. And and anyways, they take this baby away. And I'm like, "Where's my baby? Where's my baby? Please bring my baby. You know, I know he's healthy. I'm healthy. I'm good." And she's like, "Just calm down. We're going to bring him back." And they did. They brought him back. And, you know, but they had done tests on him. you know, the first 40 minutes of his life, he was away from me, and I was so angry. I was so angry right. that, you know, they had taken this away mm-hmm. from me and my baby. And mm-hmm. it took me a while to make peace with the choice that I had made, because I had put myself in that situation, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, while I was in that hospital and everything was wrong, the only thing that was right was as soon as I had my baby in my arms, I'm like this total lioness, like showing my teeth to everybody. So don't come near us. Don't you come near us. Mm-hmm. You know, don't take my baby anywhere. You know, this, you know, I was just like the lioness was alive. I was like, argh! And mm-hmm. I just understood. I was like, yep, never, ever, ever, ever again will I put myself yeah. and a baby of mine in a situation like this. I don't. Birth does not belong in a hospital. This was very clear to me. I was like, yep, okay, I did it again. It was stupid. That's what I chose. Yeah. Okay, so it was very clear. Mm-hmm. I was already in mm-hmm. this, you know, full-time mothering journey and, you know, learning about attachment, parenting, and doing all these things, trying to learn things, trying to do things differently. We moved to a farm, so I was planting. I was growing my babies, you know, with, you know, a lot of in nature. We had a lot. We had a huge garden. We had, oh, it was almost 2 years of my life of pure bliss, kind of like, you know, I was living the life that I wanted mm-hmm. to live. Yeah. But anyhow, life is very dynamic. And although I had agreed with my husband that I would be going back to work by the time Gabrielle was 3, by the time Gabrielle was 2.5, I was giving birth again. So the deal mm-hmm. was off. I was not going back to any work. That's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to be having mm-hmm. babies and yeah. practicing. Being a mom. And that's what I wanted. And that's what I got. Mm-hmm. And I really desired this, the conception of this third baby, and he came this way. And from the moment I knew I was pregnant, I was just like, okay, I need a midwife. Who's going to get me a midwife? Somebody get me a midwife, because I'm not going anywhere. We're going to be giving birth at home, you know, and everything. So I went back to my mentor, Rita, who at the time was already transitioning to becoming a traditional midwife. This was almost 10 years ago. And she's like, there's a CPM in town. She's been attending births as a doula, but she, you know, she is a midwife, and you can be her client. I'm like, cool. Let's do that. So I hired Paloma Terra, and she's Brazilian. She had, you know, finished her midwifery education in Texas. And I fell in love with the whole home birth idea. And I was just like, I was totally in it. I'm just like, yeah. I mean, this is just natural for me. I mean, like, you know, so midwifery care was beautiful, and I loved it. And then mm-hmm. by the time I was ready to give birth, Rita, my mentor, was going to be my doula. So I said, you know, Rita, yeah. So I was about 38 weeks and 5 days or something. And, you know, my water broke. And that had never happened to me before. I was sleeping. This was early in the morning. And I was awakened by this water in my bed. I'm like, what's this? You know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know this. This was new. Mm-hmm. Very different. I'm like, mm-hmm. this is new. No labor yet. You know, mm-hmm. so I let them know. I'm like, well, apparently, you know, my water is broken, but I don't know. And the detail is that this is the 6th of January, and in Brazil, we celebrate the, what is it called in English? The Day of the Kings, you know, when the kings visited.
Oh, Dia de los Reyes,
si.
Right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the day.
Dia de los Reyes, yeah.
De los Reyes, mm-hmm. exactly. Hayes, Gigi Hayes.
Reyes, yes.
Voilà. Mm-hmm. So, my midwife is married to a Canadian. And she hears her story. She tells me, oh, you know what? I have to go find myself and my kids a galette du roi, which is a cake that, you know, French mm-hmm. people eat. It's a very traditional thing. The day of the kings, you go and you eat that cake. She goes like, I'm going to get myself that cake. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. Go get your cake. I'm here. And then that's what happened during the day. Okay, so what happened was during the morning, I told Joao, I said, listen, our daughter, she wasn't at home that day because she had gone to the beach with our in-laws, my in-laws, you know, for because it's January in Brazil, it's the summer, so she was on her summer vacation, and we hadn't gone to the beach with them because, of course, we were expecting a baby, right, to be born. Mm-hmm. So Gabrielle was home with us, and the deal, by that time, we had already left the little farm that we were living in. Unfortunately, there were some problems with the owner, and we had to leave. So we were back and living in the city. It was an apartment, not a very small apartment, but it was three bedrooms, but, you know, small three-bedroom apartment. And I told my mom, like, if you can come and take Gabrielle for a walk or something, that would be nice, because I don't know what it's going to be like if he's going to, you know, I don't know. So the deal was I was going to call my mom, and she was going to come in and take him for a walk or something when I asked her to. And our other daughter was not there. And so the morning went by, and I told Joao, listen, go to work, and but come home for lunch, because, you know, maybe things will have moved by then. And it was the day that I had a helper. I used to have maybe like two or three times a week. Divina is her name. She's so funny. Divine. And she plays a part in this. There's a funny part at the end of the story about her. But she was at home, and she noticed that I was laboring, but she didn't say anything. She was like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm just going to do my thing. You know, you do your thing, I'm going to do my thing in here, whatever. So she was trying to hide from me all day long. And it was just the two of us at home, and I was laboring. Then at some point I called Rita, and I said, hey, Rita, you know, I don't know what's going on. You know, would you like to come over? She's like, you know what? I'm just going to come over. Let me take a shower, and I'll come over. So she took a shower, and she came, and she was wearing a white dress, and she looked so fabulous. You know, she looked fresh. It was late morning, and she looked fresh, and I was like, oh, you're so fresh. That's wonderful. So anyways, we're there, and we're chatting, and I'm laboring, and we're chatting. And then at some point, she's like, do you want to maybe try and feel your own cervix? Maybe try and see where you are? And I'm like, you know, because we had been feeling on our own cervixes for the past 2 years, you know, doing, you know, fertility awareness classes and all these things. So I was like, okay. And I couldn't feel a thing. I'm like, I can't feel anything. There's nothing here. Like, okay. So she's just observing, right? She's observing. And then at some point, we have our midwife on the phone. She's like, yeah, how's it going? And she's still like, oh, I'm trying to get this galette. I'm trying to get this galette. And we're like, oh, okay, so get your galette, you know, whatever. And then we're having lunch. And then, you know, at some point, Rita's like, yeah, can I have lunch? I'm like, yeah, let's have lunch. So we're having lunch. And then at some point, you know, I start getting very serious about this. And there's a sofa. It's a small square living room. There's a sofa. There's a table. There's like a TV set with a thing, and there's another thing. So you can imagine the four walls. So I was sitting on the sofa, and Rita was eating at the table, looking at me, you know, just, you know, checking me out, kind of checking me out. And I was like, I'm getting really serious at this moment. And then I say, I need to poo. I need to poo. I need to poo. And she's like, okay, where's your birth kit? It's right there. So she opens the box and says, let's throw some towels, whatever, on the floor. So she just puts, and she says, hey, honey, come to the floor if you feel like it. You can pull on the floor. It's all good. Do your thing. And I'm totally in the zone, like really completely focused. And I'm like, the poo, the poo. And then it hits her. And she's like, oh, she gets the phone. She calls the midwife. She says, hey, she wants the poo. And the midwife goes, yes, can you tell her to touch and tell you if it's hard? And I touch, and she says, I need to touch. And I touch. I said, it's hard. And she just goes, well, it's the head. Okay, bye bye. So she hangs up. Wait, Mayra, your baby's here. I can see the head. So I'm on my knees, and I'm leaning on my husband at this point, just like feeling the urge to push, and I'm just pushing like very hard, because I'm just like, oh, I want this over with. So I push, and he comes. And Rita has her bare hands, of course, and she receives him in her hands under me, and he's there. He had two times the cord around his neck, and he releases it, and she passes him to me. So I was, by that time, I was on the ground on my knees. So I just sit back and I lean against the sofa on the ground. I take off my t-shirt. I was only wearing the t-shirt until then, but I take it off and I put him on my chest, and he doesn't make a single sound. And I start, you know, rubbing him, and it's the first time I see Lanugo. I'd never seen it. Because my other babies were very bald and, you know, no hair anywhere. And this baby comes with a little bit of hair and Lanugo. And I'm just in awe. Mm-hmm. And Rita just tells me, talk to him. And you know, just keep talking to him, calling him. And I say, hey, baby, you're here. And then he starts getting pink. He transitions without a single sound. So aware and present. Like the atmosphere in the room is just this, wow. Everything's just, wow, what just happened? And this being, he doesn't make a sound. He looks, you know, he's just so present with his eyes and just so like, right, I'm here. I have arrived. This is me. And this is who I am. And this is how I come into the world. Like, I know what I'm doing. I'm like, okay, okay. And, you know, so we're just there in this oxytocin bubble. And 10 minutes later, Paloma arrives, our midwife, and she comes up the stairs. Again, we're living in a three-story, you know, in with stairs. And she rushes up the stairs, has a oxygen tank and the things. And oh, but she comes and sees what happened. She leaves her stuff at the entrance. She comes in and she's like, wow, it's beautiful and everything. And then it's the first time. And at some point, I'm like, I'm feeling a little bit pushy. And I say, yeah, maybe put him to your breast. Now it's time for the placenta to be born. And I give birth to the placenta. And it was the first time I saw my own placenta. And I had never seen, women talking about placentas. And Rita and Paloma were just looking at the placenta, seeing how beautiful it was, how wonderful, and everything, how beautiful. And I was like, what are you two talking about? What's the deal? My thing until that point was, even though I was totally into home birthing and I knew it was for me and it was perfect, I really had no, I had never read anything about birth. Never. I had no knowledge about physiology, no knowledge about placentas. I had zero knowledge. All I had was my own experience with my previous births, and this deep knowing that birth is this event that, you know, is natural and easy and physiological, and that's how it's supposed to be among people that I love, among people that I trust and that trust me, you know. It was, wow, what a healing experience, you know. And I started sharing this because this was 9 years ago and home births were on the rise and people were talking about it. And I used to be a blogger at that time, you know, talking about my experience of being a stay-at-home mom. So, you know, I wrote that story. That story, you know, was read all over Brazil. I received a lot of messages from people all over. It was very impactful. There was a lot of impact on the people around me. And there was a lot of impact in my own family. My sister had given birth a year prior to that, and she ended up being a transport. She was actually the first one who said, I'm going to give birth. She was living in a part of Brazil. It's the Northeast. And there lives a midwife called Sueli. She's quite famous. She has her own way of teaching midwifery and all the things. And Sweetie was her midwife. But there are more details to that birth story. I'm not going to share the birth story, but it ended up in the transport. And my, my sister was sectioned. And because, of course, that midwife and the doctor that received my sister don't have a relationship. And that obstetrician hates that midwife, right? So it's a, there's no discussion. It's not like, let's see what's happening. It's just like direct. If it's a transport, my darling, you're going for a section. You know, so it's pretty much that's the conversation. I mean, no conversation, right? So my sister was sectioned, and you know, that was very heavy for my family because we were not expecting this, and none of us. It was deeply felt, and we worked a lot, you know, that. And my mom was present at that birth, and it was very impactful as well for her to see, like, her daughter being transported, so-called in emergency, and being sectioned and all that. So anyways, it was a whole story. And then a year later, here I am, like, I am giving birth at home, and this is what we do, women, this is what women do, you know, and I get it, and I do it, and it's so healing for me and for my family and for my friends, you know, for the women around me. It was just such a beautiful experience that, you know, by the time I was pregnant with my fourth, I mean, there's not even a thought in my mind. I'm just like, yeah, I mean, duh, what are we gonna do? Duh, just stay home and get birth. So that's what we did, except that there's a little detail to that fourth birth, which is important to mention because it played a part during my labor, and it was my emotional state at the time. I was living a very hard situation with my husband. We were actually separating again, and by the time I was pregnant, and we were in the midst of finding, you know, what this means. And when I was in labor, you know, the fear of what's going to happen to me. I'm going to be a single mom. I'm going to be a single mom with four children without a profession. I don't have a profession. I don't have a job. What's going to happen in my life? You know, I have all these questions, and I couldn't really talk them over with anybody, only with my midwives. So Rita and Paloma, they were, again, my providers, and they were the only ones that I could be open with, and they knew about the whole situation. Nevertheless, I invited my mother to the birth, and I also invited my daughter. So by that time, she was 12. She was 12 years old, and 11 on becoming 12, and I wanted them to be at the birth because I wanted them to experience this birth, you know. But I was unaware that, I mean, you know, when I was in labor, I realized what was going on. But, you know, before labor started, you know, Rita kept telling me that, you know, all our fears, everything comes up at birth, you know, things like that. And I was like, yeah. So I thought that just, you know, talking with her and just trying to figure things out, this was going to be enough. In the end, it was, because the birth was beautiful. But, you know, labor, I was surprised to have a 24-hour labor. You know, like, I was really tired. I was just like, what's going on? Why hasn't this baby come yet? You know, and I started laboring, like, very early in the morning. I took walks. I visited my husband's grandmother, who lived within walking distance. I remember her calling, looking at me like, my dear, you're in labor. What are you doing here? And I'm like, oh, it's early labor. It's fine. I just wanted to go for a walk. I wanted to get some breaks. No, I wanted to buy some food. And I was just, you know, I was having the time of my life and labor. You know, it was a beautiful, again, this was exactly 2 years later because they had the same exact due date, which was my birthday. I'm a Capricorn, the 14th of January. Yuri was born on the 6th of January, the day of Kings. He's totally one. And Benjamin was on the 8th of January.
So much Capricorn energy in that house.
There's three. It's not easy. I tell you, we're stubborn people. But I was just having the time of my life. It was like labor, and you know, it's morning, and then afternoon came. You know, I take naps and I do my thing, and I start wondering. You know, by the time it's like evening, you know, end of the afternoon, I'm like, I'm like, why am I still in labor again? Why? I mean, why? You know, and then there hadn't been a single exam, cervical exam or anything. There's nothing. But Paloma, she starts getting a little bit anxious. She's like, do you mind if I touch you? Can I touch you? You know, by the time the evening is there, like, I don't know, maybe 7, 8 at night or 9 at night. I don't know. She touches me and I say, yeah, sure. And she says, oh, you're 7. You know, my, it's just what it is. You know, I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. I know something. I know things are moving. It's just like, they're not moving fast enough. So exactly. I was getting a little bit angry there, you know, and frustrated.
Yeah.
So that's the point. Everybody's in the house. Like, there, we have a full house of people, full house of women waiting for this baby to appear. And then I haven't given birth yet. So at some point, I just get really tired of it all. And I say, Rita, can you come in here? So I call Rita and I call Juan to the bedroom and I say, listen, what's going on? Like, why isn't this baby here yet? And she says, are you afraid of anything? Like, are you fearful? And then I start talking and I start crying. And I have this, just this cleansing session where I'm like, I'm so fearful. This is wrong. I'm going to be a single mom. And everything is wrong there. And he's listening, you know. And she says, it's okay. It's okay to be afraid of being alone. Yes, it's being alone. It's okay, mate. It's okay. So she just reassured me. She listened to me. She loved me. And I sent them away. I said, okay, I'm good now. I cried. I wanna sleep. So I sent them away and I lie down. And man, I felt it. Then my body decided it's time. So I felt this huge wave. I couldn't be on my back or whatever. On my side, whatever. I just had to get up. I got up and Paloma had brought a birthing stool at that time. I looked at the stool and it looked very appealing. I was like, that looks good. Because that's midnight. He's born 2 minutes past midnight. So it's almost midnight. I'm like super tired, but my body doesn't allow me to stay, you know, flat. I have to be in an upright position, but I'm so tired I can't stand anymore. I sit on the thing and I'm just like in the zone totally, and I start screaming to people like, Come, and they start coming into the bedroom because, of course, I'm crowning at that moment. And he comes. He comes, and he's born. And Paloma catches him this time, and I bring him to my chest. And I'm so exhausted. I'm so tired. So, and the beautiful thing also is that we didn't know the sex of the baby for Yuri or Benjamin. And we didn't know. And Benjamin was born and we still didn't know because I didn't have the, you know, it didn't cross my mind to look. So it was like 5 minutes after. And then Juan was like, oh my gosh, I can't wait anymore. Can I see? So it was this boy and my mom was so happy that she was there and my daughter too. And by the time we decided to cut the cord, my daughter, we asked her, what would you like to do it? So she did it. So it was beautiful. And those were my healing births. And that last birth, you know, really made me understand more things about birth, I guess. And now I think I just want to move quickly into how and why I got into birth work, even though it may sound so obvious that I should be doing birth work by that time, right? I should have thought about it. But I didn't, because I was going through other stuff and my head was just focused on how am I going to make a living. No, but I was supported. I was supported, fully supported by my ex-husband at the time and my mom, and they supported me that first year, and I was trying and doing things, and you know, things were starting to appear for me, and I was mothering and at the same time doing a part-time job, you know, so things were moving for me. And that, by that time, my husband and I got back together. And he said, so by that time, actually, he had been working for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Brazil for some years. Remember, I told you he had been a freelancer, but by that time, he had a job. And he said, I'm going to be moved to Malaysia. So we got back together. We remarried because we had divorced. So we married again, and we went to Malaysia. I get to Malaysia. I still don't know what I want to do with my life. So I'm doing a little bit of translation here and there, but transitioning, you know, I had never been to Asia in my life. I had lived abroad in other circumstances, but I had never lived in Asia. And I was so far, and, you know, I was, you know, even though mothering was very fulfilling, I had been feeling this urge to do something with my life and my talents that I couldn't place it where it belonged. And then finally it hit me. First, I looked for one doula there, and I asked her if she trained doulas, and she said no. And I don't train any doulas, and that was a big one. As soon as I got to Malaysia, I sent her an email. She said, I don't train anybody. So I thought, oh, maybe that's not it. Okay, forget about it. So I let it be for a while. But then, as I started practicing yoga more and more, at some point, I started meeting women who were pregnant and who I realized needed support, and that maybe I knew something that could benefit them. So I just started offering, and, you know, like, hey, would you like to have a prenatal yoga class with me? Maybe would you like to, you know, you can come to my house and we can talk a little bit about birth. And that's how it started. And then one of my friends with whom I had classes with, she opened her own studio, and I asked her, can I teach here? So I started teaching prenatal yoga there, you know, very small group with some friends. And then that's when women started inviting me to be their doula. Literally, can you do that doula? And I'm like, I think I can, but, you know, I've never. So I felt compelled to study about birth, study about physiology, and these invitations really led me into, oh, there's something here for me. There's something here for me, and I felt very much. It was very easy to be with these women, and it was. And I started, you know, I'm going to get certified, you know, and all that. So started studying for my certification as a doula, and then certified as a doula, and doing all of the things. And went to Bali. So a few years ago, I was in Bali with Ibu Robin Lam and Deborah Pascali Bonaro, and living the doula life, you know, like living the doula life, you know, learning about, you know, placentas, the forgotten chakra, and Janine Parvati Baker, and being involved in, you know, the birth world. Just, it was me. All of a sudden, I was doing what I was supposed to do. I was like, wow, yeah, I found it. However.
However.
Because I had felt in my body that birth doesn't belong in an institution. It belongs in the pregnant woman's body. I realized that, you know, hospital birth was not for me. Very soon in my career as a doula, I realized that. I was like, I really love this. I love serving women. I love preparing them. I hosted mother's circles for the longest time, and that was a big success in Kuala Lumpur. We had a great community there. I was friends with the few doulas that were there. So we had a great community there, a lot of gentle birthing and all that. That was beautiful. Things were rolling, except that in my heart, I knew I wanted to be a midwife. Like, I knew that I'm a midwife. I just know. I can't explain. I don't know how this is going to happen, how this is going to, you know, become a reality for me, because I'm in Malaysia. I'm Brazilian. You know, in Brazil, it's either you become a traditional midwife, so you have to find traditional midwives around, like Nawali, who's in the south, or Sueli, who's in the north, or somebody else. I forgot her name. There's a very famous midwife in Rio de Janeiro, the one who does the humanization of birth things and all the things. So you have to find these women, or even follow like a traditional, really like a traditional old midwife, because they're still alive in Brazil, some of them. You gotta go and find those things if you want to. Or you go to university and you become a nurse midwife, which is something completely out of the question for me. I'm like, that's not for me. Not at all. No, hospitals and, you know, this medicine is not for me. That's not what I'm about. And then I knew about CPMs because I had had a CPM. So and I knew Robin Lynn was a CPM. I was like, but how the heck am I going to become a CPM? I'm not even in the state. You know, what the hell is going to happen? And then eventually, I stumbled upon Indie Birth because I'd been supporting a couple of women who wanted to free birth and in Malaysia. And I was like, you know, so trying to learn as much as I could about physiological birth and free birth and trying to understand what unassisted birth was all about, because until that point, I didn't know it was a thing. Like, you know, in my own experience, I'm like, I want to have a midwife. This is just my nature. You know, I want to have women there that I love and trust. So midwifery was very natural to me this way. And, but anyway, so I started, you know, reading. And when I found Maren and I listened to her podcast, I was just like, it completely blew me away. I was like, this is it. This is the woman I want to learn from. This is it. I want to learn from her. I feel so aligned. There's so much truth here. There's so much love. There's so much authenticity. This is what I want to learn. This is the kind of midwifery I want to be doing, you know? So, you know, I start sending them emails like crazy, like total nerd, and, you know, And as it turns out, I am so, like, I have this in me, and I don't know how this is going to unfold. And we have the time in Malaysia for us was running out, and we knew we had to move. And it's not like we can pick where we're going to go, but we could kind of, like, have a say. So we were trying to get to the States because, one, our daughter, who was 18 at the time, she is an American citizen. Mm-hmm. She was born here, and we were thinking about her education. Maybe it's going to be good for her education. So it would be nice if she could go back to her. There's a reason she's born here. She has to find this out. I don't know. You know, like, she has to understand this thing. I don't know why she was born here, but she was. So something here for her. And at the same time, there's Maren Green, there's Indie Birth, and I'm just like, I got to be in the States. I don't know how. Mm-hmm. I don't know when, where, how. And we end up in Los Angeles. And I want to say the rest is history, but of course, only people who know me know this part. But eventually, you know, I'm accepted to the school. I'm granted a full scholarship to the midwifery school. And I'm told I'm living like a dream come true life. You know, I'm shadowing Dr. Stuart Fishbein here in L.A., you know, I'm invited to witness birth. I'm going to be shadowing Maren very, very soon. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be going back to Sedona. You know, because I've been already to Sedona.
Oh, cool.
The midwifery skills workshop. You know, things have been so. I mean, it's an amazing path that has been opened for me very beautifully. I say, and I'm so grateful and thankful because something in a thanks to my Capricorn, I guess, maybe nature. I was very, like, obsessed. Like, this is what I want. This is what I want. I'm going to get it. I don't know how. I don't know when. I don't have the finances. I don't care. It's going to happen. And it did. And it is happening. So maybe my message here for both women who are preparing to give birth and for women who are walking with women, other women, or who are feeling this call, right, to be a doula, to be a midwife, is that, you know, if you've heard this calling at some point in your life, and it doesn't matter where you are at in your life, you're in nursing school, or you're a photographer, or I don't know, or you're 50 years of age, or you're 20 years of age, but there is, I really believe there is a feminine, divine feminine awakening right now. And I think that all these things are connected and aligned. You know, the fact that I meet more and more younger women who are into their cycles and wanting to learn about birth and asking me and asking around and really wanting to take it back. You know, taking mm-hmm. back birth is a hashtag for Mindy Birth for Marin, and it's very, very strong, very powerful, because this is the cause. Mm-hmm. We're taking it back. It belongs to people, right. individuals who have Absolutely. Uteruses. And these, yes. we are the only ones capable of holding a gestation, conceiving, holding a gestation, and giving birth. And we're the only ones who can make milk. It's everything is designed mm-hmm. for us to have these babies, you know, the way nature has intended us to do. But we must be in contact mm-hmm. with it. If we're not, it's not going to happen. Or maybe we're going to have a bumpier road, or we may be more prone to other people's ideas of what we should be doing, or what the system is telling us to do, or somebody, you know, somebody else, a figure of authority telling us how I should feel about my body and what I should decide about my birth and my baby. So maybe the message mm-hmm. is trust your gut, listen to her. And when I say her, I mean mm-hmm. divine mother, divine feminine, your womb. Listen to your womb. You know, listen to your womb. You have this. You know, we've been designed to do this. So do it.
Mm-hmm. So do it. Yay. Yeah. Oh, Maida, thank you so much for just sharing all of that story. That was very beautiful. I really appreciate it. And just where you where you ended up too. And yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's great to meet another student. I am an indie birth midwifery student as well. In the second year, I'm about to be in the second year. Maida is about to be in the first. Woo! Yay. So is there, I know that you just said my message. I was wondering if there is any other parting words that you would like to share with our listeners.
Parting words.
I didn't pronounce that right.
Sorry. Say that again. I didn't get it.
Party word. No.
I would say, trust your body. Trust your intuition. You know, develop your intuition. Trust your gut. You know, listen to your own intuition. Listen to your heart. Listen to your heart, because if you've heard this calling to be walking with women, especially, I must say, I cannot not say this, especially mm-hmm. in this authentic, wise woman, license-free midwife, mm-hmm. if you're hearing this call, even if you're licensed and, you know, it, but, you know, the more spiritual aspect of birth is knocking on your door and you're listening, just listen, because it's greater than us, you know. Mm-hmm. If you know, politics of birth, it's important, but when you think about the greatness of the spiritual practice that this is, then politics becomes nothing. It's not mm-hmm. an issue. It's not even an issue. Not even in my head. Oh, don't you care that California is such a strict state? I don't mm-hmm. think about it. You know, mm-hmm. it may sound crazy for some people, but it's, for me, it's not on this level. It's a higher calling. Not to say that politics is not important. It's very important. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we must discuss it. We must talk about these things, what's happening in the world and all that. Yes. We must. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's listen to your heart. Your heart is going to guide you in this journey. And you too, mother mm-hmm. or woman, however you identify yourself with.
Both mother and woman.
Yes. You have a uterus. You're preparing to give birth. Connect to that wisdom. Mm-hmm. All the women who have given birth before you, all your ancestors, they're all there with you. And you have this mm-hmm. inside of you. Just have to remember or be reminded, but it's all in there. The universe is in you. You are the universe. I am the universe. It's all here. You know?
Mayetta, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for listening to all my blabs.
Yes. No, I love it. I could listen to it all day. It was amazing finally connecting with you.
Wonderful. Yay! Awesome sister.
Thank you. Yay. Yep. Thank
you. I'm hot. All right. Talk to you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. Storytelling is a profound agent of change, one that has the ability to plant seeds of inspiration, introspection, and beyond. If you have an empowering birth story that you would like to share on our podcast, please head over to indiebirth.org/birthwarrior to send your submissions. That's indiebirth.org/birthwarrior. Hope you have a beautiful week wherever you are in the world. Until next time, friends.